Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Table Manners. I'm Jessie Ware. I'm here with Lenny and she's got a little story for you guys about mistakes in the kitchen.
Bit of a culinary disaster, Jess. And I don't blame myself.
What happened?
I followed a recipe from The Guardian, the perfect lamb tagine.
Yep.
And when I looked it up on my index, I had to look up P rather than L because it was perfect.
What are you talking about?
I save all my recipes.
Oh, instead of lamb tagine.
Instead of lamb tagine.
Your index.
Perfect.
Did you have a spreadsheet?
No, it's in my on my computer. I save all my recipes.
Oh, so I've got every recipe. There's a book in there somewhere.
So it said, I should have realised, it said 600 grams of meat and then 200 grams of dates, my good measure dates that
they're
cost
very
expensive, individually like little pack, and then 100 grams of apricots. Didn't mention salt, it was two onions.
But where's the acid in that?
No acid. There was no tomato ketchup, nothing.
No lemon,
no orange, nothing.
Did you not think, what would Samin Nosrat do?
No, I didn't think that because it said perfect and it was in The Guardian. So I thought, no, this was going to be perfect. I felt quite smug. So I did it, cooked it, spent ages doing it. Peeled, did all the dates, took the stones out, did it all exactly as they said. Well, it was like eating something that had sugar in it. So I fished all the dates out.
Yeah. But hadn't they mushed up by this point?
They had a bit, but I tried to find them. And then I thought, I'll put some vinegar in, I'll put some tomato puree in.
Olives in it?
No, I didn't. At that stage, I wasn't sure about adding olives.
Mm.
But I put some tomato ketchup, some vinegar.
Mm.
I put salt in, which it hadn't had on the recipe, which I think was odd.
They've missed three odd ingredients, right?
So then I did all that, and then it was still not right. So I thought, what shall I do? I couldn't do another one.
Yeah.
So I went to cook. I bought one lamb tagine.
And they are very good.
For four, yeah. And then I thought, what I'll do is I took out all the lamb from mine and the chickpeas and added it to the lamb tagine I've got, and it tastes lovely.
You know what, Mum?
What?
That's problem solving. I respect you. I respect your honesty. I think a lot of listeners
I wasn't going
will
to be honest.
That.
I whispered to Tully and then Big Ears flapped and said, what's happened? I wasn't going to tell you.
Actually, let's put this to the listeners. How many of you...
I've never cheated before, have I?
I don't think this is a cheat. I think this is a solution.
A solution.
How many listeners have served up cook meals and claimed it as their own?
I think everybody does,
darling. Please write to hello@tablemannerspodcast.com.
I did throw away the casing outside.
But we're not going to tell James because he'll find out about it on the podcast.
Yeah.
But when he says it's really delicious, Lenny, what are you going to say?
I'm going to smile and say thank you.
Have you gone for a less risky pud?
You know how MasterChef, Jess, you make or break yourself with a chocolate fondant? Thought, well, I'm not going to say the words because it begins with S. I thought, I'm going to have a go.
So this could be the redemption of the
It might be the redemption, or it might be the tin lid on the hat, or whatever. It might be the end of everything.
Lenny, whatever happens,
it will be all
you're
right.
You're on fire tonight.
It will be all right, darling.
Have you got some cream?
I've got cream and ice cream, so you're in your element, darling.
Right. Anyway, we have somebody that Mum is very excited about.
Oh, my God.
Maybe you are just too excited about this guest that you read the recipe wrong.
I was trying to do... No, I'm going to show you the recipe. Yeah, I've been so excited because I've been reading his book. Mm. I just think he writes so well. It's so easy to read.
His book that is out now and it repeatedly gets back into the Sunday Times bestsellers is called...
How They Broke Britain.
He has the biggest commercial talk show.
1.4 million a week.
He manages to get the point across whilst also ask the hard questions, whilst also sound like he's talking on behalf of the whole nation. We've got James O'Brien coming on the podcast. This is going to be Lenny's app,
it's
by the way.
It's my favourite.
You know Lenny's going to put on the Radio 4 voice. She's going to get him good. So I'm just going to let you sit back and enjoy the ride, as I will. James O'Brien coming up on Table Manners. James O'Brien, cheers.
Mm. Oh, Yamas.
Yeah.
Drinking a Greek wine.
Yeah, let's see if it's any good.
Mm. Parky.
We can have something else if it probably needs opening, actually.
How are you?
Very well, thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming.
Who's going to interview who today?
I'm off duty. I'm here to... Are you probed?
Yeah. Are you good at being probed?
I love it, actually.
You don't know how excited I am.
Wow, that's so kind of you.
Well, thank you. I know you've got
form with lefties, haven't you? A lefty cannot cross the threshold without being love-bombed by you.
Kiss that there.
I know. And Alistair and Ed and all of them. Well, they're professionals.
Yeah, lefties. Ed was the kind of the great surprise.
Yes.
He's so charming.
Yes, he is.
So attractive as a human being.
And you had very little inkling of that when he was in the leader of the opposition.
James, which Tory would you suggest that we have on?
I did Dominic Grieve quite recently.
Do they count as Tories when they're
outside Parliament? The current crop, I don't know, to be honest. There's clearly some who are biting their tongue constantly and sitting on their hands. But I think there comes a point where you're biting your tongue so hard that it ceases to be...
You can't use your tongue.
Yeah, you can't use your tongue. Exactly that. So I don't know.
What's happened with the vote?
Tonight, I don't know. I was walking around Clapham.
The vote for...
The amendments on the Rwanda bill.
Oh, shit.
So all the very right-wing Tories don't think it goes far enough.
It's not nasty enough.
It's not nasty enough.
You've got a few in the middle saying it's too nasty. 30p Lee.
Yeah, 30p Lee Anderson.
Yes.
Is Jonathan Houlis following him?
Houlis. Like you've gone for the Greek... Because we're having Greek wine, you've gone for the Greek pronunciation of Jonathan Gullis. Houlis. Houlis. Malacca in there.
Malacca. He is a Malacca.
Do you go to Greece a lot then? You've got swear words under your belt.
I speak a bit of Greek. I love Greece.
How?
I had a Greek girlfriend at university, and long after breaking out with her, I was still in love with Greece. So
the
now
language
we go.
Of love.
Yes, it is. We go every year, actually.
What's the most romantic thing to say in Greek?
Oh, well, you can say I love you, but how I don't. Sagapoli.
Yeah.
Agapimou.
Agapimou.
In fact, in the book, in the acknowledgements, there's two things that obviously...
You've not put the old girlfriend in the book.
No, don't be ridiculous, Alan. Christ on the bite. There's two things that no one else will understand. I say thank you to the guy that ran the place we go to in Kardamili at the bottom of the Peloponnese every year, because
Kardamili, everyone
it's
says
beautiful,
that's
near
gorgeous,
Kalamata.
Yeah.
I really recommend it. Actually, I've got to stop
that's
recommending
where,
it. Otherwise,
oh,
no,
mate, we've done
do you
the
know
same.
What I mean?
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'm never going to get in there.
That's where Beth and has been.
So I say thank you to Stavros and all the crew at Ellie's. Oh, and then I list 15 men, all of whom I describe as having brought me great joy. And even my wife said, Who are these? And I said, that is the Kidderminster Harriers promotion-winning squad.
Well, that's quite nice.
So it's all in there.
I love that.
All my vices and joys are covered in the acknowledgements.
So, I mean, food-wise, can you recommend a Greek for us? A Greek restaurant?
In London?
Yeah.
Bayswater's pretty good. Yeah. There's a couple of nice places in Bayswater.
There used to be the one that was a major and a micro and macro.
Yes, that's right, yes.
What was it called?
I can't remember.
And it was at the back, down a little Muse place.
I could never find it. It's a short story.
It's round the back and it's a little Muse and it was delicious.
Yes,
it was delicious.
And then I could never find it again. Someone took me there.
Someone
took me there and I could never find it afterwards.
You two are going to get on.
Yeah.
It was outrageous.
Very
so
well.
We're Greek Greekophiles.
We're all Greekophiles.
What's your first order when you get to your place? Yeah.
Kolo kifo keftedes.
Oh,
Kolo kifo keftedes.
What are they?
They're the courgette ball, the courgette
fritters.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Do you get garlic sauce with
it or not?
Yeah,
the tzatziki. Or the, is it
skudalia.
Yeah. And you can't, you can order it here, you can make it here. There's nothing like sitting down with the sea and ordering it first, and probably some saganaki as well, some fried cheese, because that also you can order here.
We don't get much fried cheese.
What are you talking about?
When do you have fried cheese?
I feel like we've delved more into the prawn saganaki, which isn't the fried cheese.
I think it just means
delicious.
Fried saganaki, just right. means fried.
I thought it meant with cheese.
No, because it's prawn saganaki, which is just fried cheese. Fried prawns, it's just...
No, it's tomato and feta.
Okay, but cooked in a frying pan.
Okay, fine. You really had to finish that, didn't you, James?
No, we bake it.
Right, well, we're going to let your Greek listeners decide.
Yeah, maybe our Greek listeners should decide on that, because us lot,
but
we don't...
But we used to always have those deep-fried courgettes. You know, they were like very, very thin,
like
crispy
ribbons.
Like ribbons.
Yes.
And then have skudalia on top of that. Mm. And you had to eat them as they came out the pan.
Yeah, otherwise it gets soggy. But the kolo kifo keftedes, there's like nothing else on
there. And what's the first drink? Is it a mythos?
No, I probably order some wine. So it's a krasi kokino. Because the great thing
about... Your pronunciation is...
Kokino is red wine, darling.
Yeah, but you're doing very well.
I'm showing off vine.
You are showing off. Yeah, I'm finding it quite attractive.
Well, there you go.
Because
two reasons why. I mean, we're quite well known now in... They recognise us because we go back every year. But also, almost in the polar opposite of trying to speak French in France, Greek people love it. Especially someone as pale as me. No one's ever going to mistake me for a Mediterranean. So when I actually come out with passable restaurant Greek, which is all I've got, it creates a lovely atmosphere.
That.
People love it.
I've had that. 30 years.
You try.
I've been twice now to the City Lit.
Yes.
Where Socrates, my teacher, goes... Oh, bravo, bravo, Helena. And I know one word.
What is it? Malakas.
No.
Scarce.
I'm trying to say hello or I am, and I can't get it at all. And if I get one word right, he goes, bravo.
Maybe you need James O'Brien teaching you, Mum.
No, I think not.
Over a glass of wine.
Too clever.
So you are on Table Manners.
Thank you.
We are thrilled to have you.
Ditto.
Mum's got
a lot of questions. I've read a lot of the book.
Good.
A real lot of it.
Good.
And I mean, we're going to talk about the book, but can we start at the beginning, dinner time, in your childhood?
Where were you brought up?
Kidderminster in Worcestershire. So Mum and Dad are both from Yorkshire.
Yorkshire, and they ended up in Kidderminster?
Because Dad was a journalist, so he got made, when I was three and a bit, he was made the Midlands correspondent of the Daily Telegraph, which in those days was
that was big time.
Very reputable and respectable newspaper.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You haven't got a Brummie accent at all.
No.
They did send me
to private school, so I think that played a small part in the... I don't have a Yorkshire accent or a Midlands accent, but yeah, Kidderminster, a nice, normal childhood.
Yeah.
And
was it a boarding school?
Not until I went to Weekly boarding school when I was 10, but only up the road, and only because I insisted on it. My mum was heartbroken. I mean, you don't know these things until
you... were 10?
Yeah.
And you wanted to go to...
Yeah, because I couldn't be the lead in the school play unless I was a boarder, because if I was, then Mum or Dad would have to pick me up at like 8, 9 o'clock at night, and they couldn't really do that, because Dad would be out on jobs and my sister would be in bed at home. So without telling them, when I realised that I was in with a chance of being the lead in the school play, I applied to become a weekly boarder at school. The headmaster was very surprised by this, because my parents hadn't mentioned it, and I went home and told my parents, and my mum burst into tears. And I didn't really register at the time how... thoughtless that was of me, but I got the part.
Did you get the part?
Yeah, I got the part.
What was the part?
It was playing the scarecrow in Percival the Performing Pig. So it's one of the greats. One of the canon.
There wasn't even any kissing in it.
You chose the scarecrow.
There's the Dane, there's the Scottish play, and then there's Percival the Performing Pig. No, I didn't choose, but it was weird. I mean, it was school in those days. I got in at the very end of that Victorian era, almost, when children were still beaten and the dormitories were still very Spartan, and you'd have, you know, you weren't quite breaking the ice on your water bowls, but you know, the particularly at my next school, the bullying was quite normal, so it was very weird actually, but it was not wholly unpleasant, and I never regretted it, But you
did
do
you
wonder.
Miss your mum and dad?
Yeah, like, desperately. I used to miss the smell of my mum's hair. I always remember that.
Oh.
Was always when I was
what
at my...
What did it smell of?
I
did
don't
she
know.
Have hairspray on?
She must have worn perfume, yeah. Mustn't she? Probably,
yeah.
I don't know, Lancome. What's Lancome's best
Elnett.
Perfume?
Was it
no,
Elnett hairspray?
No, it wasn't hairspray, perfume. It was perfume.
Oh, perfume.
So mum worked on the Estee Lauder counter in Owen and Owen in Kidderminster for a while around that time. So she always smelled lovely. And yeah, I'd miss that. I'd really miss that.
What was the food like at boarding school?
At prep school? Well, both absolutely shocking. I could not exaggerate how awful it was. I found it inedible. But I'd been quite spoiled, I suppose. Always, mum would cook our favourites. And
what were your favourites?
I used to love what mum called it risotto, right? But it wasn't risotto.
What was it?
It was bolognese sauce with rice.
Clever.
It's delicious.
All right. Delicious.
And it's probably
maybe
still...
You should try that with your
with kids. The
kids.
It's so good. It's so good. But that's what I thought risotto was. So when I moved to London and I went to a fancy Italian restaurant and I saw risotto on the menu, I thought... Yeah. So I ordered a risotto.
What did you get?
Well, I got a lumpy soup, didn't I? Which was delicious. And thank God I really, really liked it.
But it wasn't...
So obviously I'd been slightly misled cute. About what constituted, so she'd do that, but also normal mince, you know, mince
was
and onions with potatoes.
Cook?
Yeah, I think so, but I think she was a brilliant cook. And but also, you know, this was the 70s and 80s, so we'd have Finder's crispy bread pizzas, Finder's French bread pizzas and pancake rolls. But
did that feel like a treat?
Yeah, they were treats. Yeah. So treat, for what we call now processed food was a treat. It was like, mum would normally cook something, have a roast every Sunday with Yorkshire puddings, whatever the roast was. We'd always have Yorkshire puddings.
So you went home every weekend?
Did until I was 13.
And then where did you go?
And then I'd stay at school. And then when I went to my next school in Yorkshire, a place called Ampleforth.
Oh, my God.
I'd be away for
a
month. And yeah, it was horrible in many, many ways. But the food there was shocking.
Are you Catholic then?
Yeah.
O'Brien.
Yeah.
That's a clue.
It meant a lot to my dad, the Catholic element of it, but the food was unbelievable. The first thing I used to do, I still do this. My mum notices it. Dad's not with us anymore. I go back to Kidderminster. I've got my own home now, I'm very glad to say, you know, with a family and two children. And I have a rough idea about what's in the cupboard and what's in the fridge. But whenever I go to my mum's, I was 52 last week, whenever I go to my mum's, I open the fridge, check out what's in the fridge.
Oh, Jessie does every day.
But because you're hungry or just because you're...
Oh, no, I've already delved in and just had a little like, pick of a bit of cheese.
But I'm literally still holding this sense of finally there's food in this.
No, I'm just greedy.
Yeah, well, it's fine. That's perfectly normal behaviour, isn't it?
So would you say the bolognese risotto was the kind of memorable dish of your childhood?
For home cooked, that was my favourite dish.
Yeah.
My sister's was fish fingers and chips. And then on Fridays, we'd get fish and chips from the chippy. That was a treat as well. But yeah, there were other things. I used to really like cold ham and new potatoes with salad. Mum would do that as well. I'm trying to think. I'm not doing her a great service, but she'd cook.
She's still with you, your mum?
Yeah, yeah.
Does she come for Christmas?
She's not very mobile at the moment. So she came for last Christmas, but she couldn't come for this Christmas. So we went up there in between Christmas and New Year. My sister cooked. My sister started cooking quite late. In sort of her mid to late 40s, she suddenly discovered an enthusiasm for cooking, which is really, really nice. So food kind of, it did play quite a big part. And we'd go out quite a lot. I realise now that Dad was putting it on expenses, which I didn't realise at the time.
Good for him.
So we'd go out for Indian food and Chinese food, which was still relatively new. There was only one or two Indian and Chinese restaurants in Kidderminster at the time. And I do. I think the combination of it having really good food at home and really awful food at school had quite an odd effect on me for a while. So it's almost bingy.
Did you go on holiday in England away?
No, I think they were spending so much on school fees.
They couldn't afford anywhere
we
else.
Couldn't really. So we stayed in a caravan in Brittany one year. And we stayed in a weird cottage in Filey that some distant uncle owned, and you had to put 5 pence pieces in the... in the meter, but no, we'd never really holidayed as kids, and I think it was presented to me as your dad doesn't like going on holiday, but I realise now that they'd kind of bankrupted themselves sending me to that bloody school.
So, I mean, you had this acting ambition initially,
yeah,
and then your dad was a journalist. When did things change for you? When did you
want
to go into journalism?
Do you ever do that thing where you've got a story and you can't remember whether it's actually true or not?
Oh, yeah, let's go with it.
It's such a good story.
Okay, go ahead.
So I thought I was going to be an actor. I wanted to be an actor. I got expelled from school.
Oh,
what did you do?
Yeah, cannabis, which doesn't sound like a very big deal. I know, but it was 1990,
Were you selling it? Were you smoking it?
I wasn't selling it, but I was... So,
how did you access it?
Well, we would go illegally into York. We'd get a taxi. Me and my best friends would.
So you didn't go to Betty's for a
No. I did. My old English teacher took me to Betty's. I sat down, and he says, "I have terrible news." So my old English teacher, Mr. Davey, drove me into York illegally to meet my girlfriend. I was going out with a girl who was the granddaughter of a famous poet. She was the granddaughter of a poet called William Empson.
Your English teacher loved this.
Well, because he'd known William Empson in Hong Kong during the war. I think that they'd both been spy adjacent, but obviously he could never talk to me about that. And William Empson had been thrown out of Cambridge because a cleaner found a condom in his drawer. So this would be the 1930s.
You weren't allowed to have condoms?
No,
why?
Apparently not. Well, I think you weren't supposed to have sex outside marriage, I presume. 1930s,
he wasn't gay or anything.
No, nothing like that.
They would encourage that.
Mr. Davey might have been, but William Empson definitely wasn't. But he could not believe I was going out with the granddaughter of this poet that he'd known in Hong Kong in the 30s. And he caught me one day looking quite depressed, and I said, "I really want to see my..." He said, "Oh, God, I'll drive you." So I got under a blanket in the back of his car.
Oh my God!
He drove me into York.
Is this true?
No, this one's true. Okay. But they're all true, but the next one I'm not 100% sure is correct. It's not as good as this one. And he takes me to meet my girlfriend. I go and meet her, and we, you know, spend a bit of time together. And then I say, "Come and meet Mr. Davey." She goes, "I can't. I've got to get back to school. I'm all..." Because she'd hopped over the wall as well. She was at a boarding school.
Which school?
She was at a boarding school in York called The Mount, would you believe?
How did you meet her?
Well, we used to go into York at the weekends with, like, pockets full of money that all our mates had given us. And then we'd score. And take it back and dish it out.
How did you meet the girlfriend?
She'd be in the pubs and the wine bars
We didn't
really do it in York, but we'd go out for a drink and have a... And I got to Betty's, and Mr. Davey's waiting for me, and I said, "Rachel couldn't join us, sadly. She had to go back to school." And he goes, "I have terrible news." And I thought, fuck, we've been busted. I'm going to get expelled. Because, you know, that's it. Straight out the door. And he'd be in all sorts of trouble as well. And I said, "What, sir?" And he said, "They've run out of muffins."
What was worse? Seeing Rachel.
I always feel that a boy should have muffins with his English teacher.
Oh my God.
He was lovely. It was a touch of the Uncle Monty's about him. But to answer your question, so I got expelled, and the deal with Mum was, I have to get a degree now. I can't apply to drama school.
Oh.
I have to have a safety net. And if I get a degree, then she'll help me go to drama school. Mum and Dad will help me go to drama school.
Did she see your performance?
She did, yes. That may have influenced her reticence. And then in my first year at university, I saw Michael Sheen. I went to the London School of Economics.
Oh, wow.
And I saw Michael Sheen in When She Danced with Vanessa Redgrave. And he was only a little bit older than me. More or less the same age. I think he got cast in his final year at RADA. And this would be my first year at university. And I just remember thinking, there's no point, mate. I'm not even close to this guy. So that was the end of that.
So journalism happened because you just...
Well, what did you do at LSE first?
Philosophy.
Right.
Okay.
It was supposed to be philosophy and economics. But because I'd been expelled from school, I didn't have a great deal of support during my university application period. And I got in.
Into LSE?
You must have been incredibly bright.
I wasn't stupid. But I got there on my first day. The course I was signed up for involved economics. And the teacher said, my daughter loves this story. The teacher said, has anybody here not got a maths A-level? And there's about 120 kids in the room. About 30 of us put our hand up. And then he says, okay, and now has anybody here not got an economics A-level? And probably about 40 of us put our hand up. And then he said, like laughing, because anyone just put their hand up twice? And I put my hat and I look around the room.
No one else.
There's literally not a single other person who. So I thought, this is going to be interesting. And I wasn't cut out for that. So I dropped that bit of it and just did the philosophy, which was lovely.
Did you work for a newspaper?
Back in the day?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did, kind of. I couldn't get arrested when I left college. So I carried on with my student job. I worked at Aquascutum on Regent Street. Do you remember Aquascutum?
Oh, yeah.
Posh raincoats and
suits.
Very
posh.
And I liked it. And I always worked in retail. I worked in River
You're
Island.
You're quite tall. You probably could
have thought I was a 40 long in those days. Yeah. Close to a 44 regular now. I don't know how that works. And I carried on doing it. And it was just reaching the point where I didn't think journalism was going to happen. I'd applied for all the training.
And did you want to be a journalist?
Yeah,
you
that was always.
This was
if
your
I
part.
Wasn't going to be an actor, then I wanted to be a journalist like my dad. That was all I ever
oh,
wanted.
Oh, yeah, because your dad was
because a lot of us grow up just thinking all I want to do is what my parents did, because you don't know anything else.
So, James, what I really want to know,
yes.
Please God, when we have a change of government, what are you going to do? This has been a very rich vein for you.
Yeah, good for business, bad for the soul. That's how I describe it.
You're not going to have a go up here, are you?
I mean, obviously, if he does bad things, I'll be after him like a rat up a drainpipe, with a sense of betrayal, which I never have with the Tories.
Mm.
But I don't think he will at the moment.
But have you always been a Labour voter?
You did vote
for Boris, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I think I did in 2008.
Yeah.
I'm not a humble...
Was that like an ironic vote? Yeah,
kind of. I wasn't very political. I know that sounds hard to believe, but I wasn't paying attention. I wasn't very, very engaged. I was a showbiz journalist. I was never a political...
And he was a bit more showbiz.
I was never a political journalist. He's very...
Showbiz?
For which paper?
Yeah, I ended up a showbiz editor of the Daily Express when I was about 27.
Oh, fucking
but
hell.
But it's a very different paper.
Okay.
Calm down, seriously. It was edited by Rosie Boycott, who founded Spare Rib magazine. She was a brilliant feminist, a huge liberal.
She was.
She organised the legalised cannabis campaign that got Paul McCartney involved in it.
Did she smoke a lot?
What? I don't remember. No,
is that
then.
How you got the job, James?
Yeah, I used to sort her out. No, I didn't. No, Christ no. But it was not. Yeah, I have to qualify that when I say I worked for the Express.
Yeah, right.
Because
it
was a complete... I don't know, because I needed work, that I would ever have turned down work on more right-wing papers, but it was not a right-wing paper. So I ended up doing a little... I got offered a job on telly because I... It's a mad one, this. So you start getting booked to do paper reviews or late-night appearances on Five Live, and then things just escalated. To the point where they'd be inviting you onto breakfast television to talk about Liam and Patsy's relationship. And you knew nothing.
Really?
None of them know anything. The royals are the same. No, the royal people, none of them know anything. But you just sit there and sound plausible.
Oh, do you make it up?
Do you?
You never make it up. But you just sort of say, well, obviously, you know, things aren't looking great. And then the presenter would say, well, you can say that again. They just got divorced.
Do you ever regret anything that you've said...
On air?
Yeah. On air or as a showbiz journalist?
One thing I feel really, really bad and quite silly about was the Beckhams.
Why?
Because the three big icons of our generation that I loved from the start were the Beckhams and Robbie Williams. There's a review, and I can't find it because it's not online, but Robbie Williams' first album that I gave 5 stars to. I called it brilliant. And at the time, everyone was slagging it off. It was only when Angels came out that his career started coming back round again. And I wish I could fucking find it, because I want to...
I'm sure Robbie can. Have you seen all that bloody archival footage? I'm sure he's got it. Yeah.
But I did, after David Beckham got sent off in the World Cup for kicking that...
Yeah,
Diego,
of course,
Simeone.
We all loved him.
And, well, not then we didn't.
No. I loved
horrendous.
Him, though.
You
loved
and me
him.
Saw the truth.
Jesse and I used to go to Chelsea and they'd be going, boo, and we'd say, piss off, leave him alone.
Good.
We did, didn't we?
We loved him.
So I got the first interview. In fact, my entire journalistic career was based on getting this interview, because everybody wanted it. I was completely unknown.
How did you get it?
I got it... I don't know if I've ever told anyone this before. I
love that.
I got it by giving very... I don't know. I got it partly... by giving very warm reviews to all of the other clients that the PR company had.
Oh my God!
You know, I'd say, yeah, that's a
brilliant,
banging
yeah,
tune.
Yeah, yeah,
that.
Right.
So,
so
that was only
so you got
this was
the,
all
so
to
you get the interview
that,
with
no,
Beck.
And you got the interview,
and I got the big interview
with both of them.
Well, Victoria was there. She was 8 months pregnant with Brooklyn, just to time it, to place it in space and time.
Yeah,
and they, I just thought they were lovely, and he was so shy. He so didn't want to be there. And she was so...
But
they
she
loved
supported
the bones of each
lot,
other. Do you know what she did? She did his hair and makeup. We had hair and makeup, and she did it. So without telling them, I put across the bottom of the photograph, I put
hair and makeup,
hair and makeup
Victoria.
Victoria Adams, as she was at the time.
So what do you regret?
Oh, I'm coming to that.
Share it with the group, James.
So I was a favoured journalist.
Oh God.
And I think it was even in the diary that he was going to come round to my place in Earl's Court after a Chelsea game in top secret circumstances. And we would talk about me ghosting his first autobiography. And then they got married. So you'd have to check the timings. I might be slightly misremembering. And for reasons I can't quite remember, I must have had a real dry patch of bylines. I must have not had a byline in the paper for a couple of weeks, which as the showbiz editor is quite a big deal. And so I wrote a piss-taking piece about their wedding.
Are you mad?
No, yes. Yeah. Well, I didn't think they'd care or notice. Well, no.
And they wore purple and sat on thrones.
Now, this would have been post you doing the interview actually got on well with
really
them.
Really well, really well.
And so...
And I wrote something like, as the doves took off...
Not nice.
..into the darkening sky, so the last vestiges of their credibility went with them, or something terrible. Like that. And if you'd said to me at the time, that's a bit silly, I would have said to you, don't be daft, they're not going to care. But they really did.
They did
care. She really cared, apparently. And the PR that I'd spent a long time cultivating, who I actually really liked as well, but she was a notoriously fierce PR. She fucking went for me down the phone. I mean, you could... holding it. Well, nor do I now. You asked if there's anything I regretted. Not these aren't stories I'm proud of.
Actually, I think that's
mean. Yes, it is. It was awful behaviour. So that, yeah, more than anything else.
Did you know what you were doing when you did that?
No idea. I needed a byline, Jesse. I needed to get my name in the paper because it hadn't been... It's a very high-pressure... these aren't excuses, they're explanations.
Yeah.
It's a high-pressure environment. And you know, I was cocky, late 20s. Quite a lot of people quite keen to see me fail. So I was always conscious of pushing the boat out. But what a shitty thing to do. Their wedding day.
Have you ever seen them since?
I saw them at the Albert Hall. I forget what the gig was. And we were all in the posh bits. And she...
Did she recognise you?
Yeah, and then she remembered. So this is going back a long time. So it wouldn't have been long afterwards. And I saw her face go, oh, it's that lovely bloke that interviewed David.
Yeah, wasn't so lovely.
And then I saw the face go, oh, and he's the bastard that... And that was that. So I'm really sorry about that. Actually.
Well, I'm sure they're listening to the podcast. You maybe they accept your apology. Yeah, I don't know.
I hope so. I hope so. It's very sincere.
What has been your... Maybe it's harder to say your proudest moment, or like the thing that has just felt the most terrifyingly brilliant piece of... Well, for LBC, like, was there one moment where you were like, this, everyone's listening, you can hear a pin drop?
I'm not that fussed about names. I don't have many booked guests on the show. I don't chase headlines, which might be a mistake. So I mean, when people, and I don't know why this happens psychologically, but people sometimes tell you stuff they've never told anybody else before. There's a sort of almost like the confessional, the relationship between the caller. And you have to have spent years in the job to build up that sort of trust. Mm. But we did and continue to do quite a lot. Well, we did a lot more before politics went mad on child sexual abuse. And people would ring in, adults would ring in, grown men would ring in and break down in tears. And that was both, you know, profoundly horrible and profoundly special. So those would be... In terms of the actual moment on air, they would be the most powerful. Off air, and this happened surprisingly often until about 2020, people would tell me that they had that the show had changed them enough to change their politics. So there's one chap who's now trying to become a Labour candidate who was a member of the EDL when he started listening to the show. And he came to see me at a gig and he sat in the front row. And he was staring at me to the point where I was quite unnerved.
Yeah.
But he was just trying to pluck up the courage to come up afterwards. And he gave me a letter and said, I can't talk to you, but please read this. And he'd left his number on it. So I got in touch with him just to say thank you. And that happened about a dozen times. Not specifically EDL members, but quite often people who'd been persuaded by very far right or very unpleasant rhetoric. And then they'd tune into the show and just sort of slowly think, well, hang on, that's bollocks. And then they'd hear people ring in with the same opinions that they had. and it generally doesn't go well for them. And so those are special moments for me, a sort of combination of on-air and off-air. And then career-wise, probably I did an interview with Nigel Farage in about 2014 that went berserk, and I mean truly berserk. And it's sadly, in a way, it was before viral clips were a thing. But it was, you know, it was huge news the next day. He was dragged out of the studio by his own PR.
The discussion around?
The discussion was around him being a racist liar, and no one else had done. And I couldn't understand why. So because I'd follow it, and there's a friend of mine called Alex Andreu who writes. He does the Oh God, What Now podcast now. And writes a bit, and he'd written for the New Statesman. It's about half a dozen things that had come to my attention about the fascists that they were knocking about within the European Parliament, the hardcore National Front racists that he'd been knocking about with when he was trying to get into the top of UKIP, the stuff that he'd said about people speaking foreign on trains, despite the fact that his own children spoke German at home, all of this stuff actually really concerned me. You know, I thought this is weird because he was still a bit smelly for the mainstream media in 2014. I just had a sense that, because of callers, a great thing about my job is that I get a proper opportunity to find out what people are thinking. Mm-hmm. And when people are sharing with you really pungent opinions and you dig into where they come from, quite a lot of roads were leading back to Nigel Farage, you know, on the immigration stuff. And the Muslim stuff was more, what's his chops, Little Tommy Ten Names. But the immigration and the racism and the Brussels stuff in 2014, that was all Nigel Farage. So he comes on, quite a convoluted process by which he comes on the programme. And I just hit him with all the stuff that I know, and it's just all there. And it was terrible for him, but it didn't. And people like Dan Hodges, who writes the Mail on Sunday now, wrote the next day, Farage is finished, his career is over. The Sun wrote the next day, this is a clearly racist position. The Sun came out against him and on my side. The Mail commissioned me to write about what a tosspot he was. And I remember thinking at the time and saying at the time to my wife and my listeners, I said, nah, it's not going to touch the size. You should see my inbox. People love it. People think he got the better of me. You still go on YouTube and like 10% of the replies on that clip will say he got the better of me, which is a bit like saying someone who's just been beaten 5-0 actually won.
So how did you feel when he became a presenter on LBC?
I was very uncomfortable and very unhappy.
Did you ever think about leaving?
I did, yeah, of course. I did think about leaving, but what would that have achieved? In the sense,
Did you come across him? Only once. He's resilient, isn't he?
Yeah, of course.
He doesn't care. And that's
he does
what,
care. He's desperate to be liked.
Care about?
He's desperate to be liked.
And he ate fucking penises and balls. That's why he did
I'm a Celebrity. Yeah.
That was terrifying.
Although lots of nice people have done I'm a Celebrity.
Not
Matt Hancock. I was thinking more of my mate James McVeigh out of the Vamps. Like, he's Harry Redknapp.
Peter Andre.
That was a good year. He's desperate
would
to be
you
liked.
Would you do I'm a Celebrity?
I don't think I could. I don't think I'm... I'm really bad with rats.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Mum, can I help with any of the food?
No, it's almost done.
What are we having?
So we're having lamb tagine with couscous and some tomato and cucumber salad and some beans.
That's perfect.
I hope it's all right.
Well, you know it will be.
Well, I don't know.
I've heard previous episodes. Nothing's ever gone wrong.
So whilst Mum serves up,
yes,
I would like to ask you your last supper.
Mm.
You've got a starter, a main, a pud, and a drink of choice.
I've got a horrible feeling that I'm a cliche. So my starter would be a stone-cold prawn cocktail.
I had a very good prawn cocktail at the weekend.
Where were you?
It's this new restaurant called The Dover in Mayfair.
Okay.
And it was really fab.
What was in it? What made it different?
It wasn't loads of Marie Rose. It had like a little tomato and horseradish dipping thing. Ooh. It was on this tower. I'll show you a picture.
Yeah,
I mean, maybe it wasn't saucy enough, but it was fabulous. Go on, where have you had your best prawn cocktail?
Well, do you not have like that child? Oh, look at that.
Yeah, it looks fab, right?
Oh, that does look nice.
It looks good, right?
What's it on? Just on lettuce?
It was There's on no like, it felt like almost like kohlrabi or something like that, but also lettuce, iceberg lettuce.
Ooh.
It was good.
So you've got that memory of the perfect one, which would be at the Burnie Inn.
Where's the Burnie Inn?
The Burnie Inn was a steak. Your mum will know. I know she is. So it was like a steakhouse chain. In most towns, outside big cities, the Burnie Inn would be the only restaurant with metal cutlery.
Oh, okay.
And it was steak, prawn cocktail. These were the days when you could have grapefruit juice as a starter. But the Ivy do an amazing prawn cocktail.
Do they?
Yeah, they do. And so do the...
It's come back.
It's in vogue.
But it never went out of vogue for me. Or oysters.
Oysters.
Yeah, but yeah. I always think that's not a proper starter. So it was my birthday on Saturday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. And we went out for dinner, and because it was my birthday, I ordered oysters and a starter.
Yeah, damn right.
Which was nice. They did a crab toast, which was incredible.
Yum. Where did you go?
We went to a new restaurant in Brentford called The Waterside, which is Sam Harrison's place, the same guy who has The Riverside in Hammersmith.
So it was a good meal?
Yeah, it was excellent.
Okay, so you're having oysters and a prawn cocktail.
Yeah, I think so.
And then?
It's a tough one, isn't it?
It is a tough one, James, but you asked the tough questions, so you know.
I mean, I don't think I enjoy any meal as consistently as a really good cod and chips with mushy peas.
Oh, well, where do you get your cod and chips from?
Well, it's quite hard in the southeast.
Is it?
Yeah.
We've got great ones.
Poppies is all right. Poppies is a chain.
We've got Ollie's. We've got Moxon's.
Oh, Ollie's in Herne Hill?
Yeah.
That's
Ollie's, it's decent.
And we've got Moxon's.
Okay, is that
who are a fishmonger.
Well, I'll try that out.
Have some of that and have some of that. Jess, can you help people?
It's all right. It's under control.
You think?
Yeah. Chill out, Mum. So that would be... I'd find it very hard to beat that. Ever since I was a kid, that is my meal of champions. But it's hit and miss, isn't it? There's nothing worse than...
Actually, fish and chips is lovely.
Oh, it's nothing like it.
It is delicious, actually.
Okay, so we're going fish and chips.
Yeah.
Lots of vinegar?
Yeah, loads of vinegar. Brown sauce.
Brown sauce?
Brown sauce, always brown sauce.
That makes sense.
Because
it's tangy.
Yeah.
I get that.
No, it doesn't make sense.
Of course it makes
sense. We get a little battered sausage on the side?
Back in the day. Saveloy and chips, for a snack on the way home.
I think that's what your teacher might have got you.
it's in your dreams.
Pudding.
Mm.
Sweet person? Sweet kind of guy?
I don't know. As I'm getting older, I'm not enjoying sweets as much as I used to. I was a huge sweet. And also sweets. Mm. You know, like penny sweets.
Mm.
Quarter mm-hmm. pound sweets. I used to eat them coming out of my ears. But not as much as I used to be. I like a cheesecake. Quite straightforward. It'd be a good old-fashioned custard tart, and like a little custard, not a Portuguese
like
one. I like the Portuguese ones, but I'd go for a. It used to be great. Greg's doesn't do them, but before Greg's, there was a bakery chain called Wimbush, or they used to do sweet cakes as well, and that would be the. Be a custard tart. Crumbly pastry.
And drink of choice.
My favourite alcoholic drink is a martini, a vodka martini.
Oh, with a twist?
I like it very dry with an olive.
Dirty, then?
Well, not dirty.
You don't
That's
like the
when
olive
you pour
brine.
In the juice. They do one at the restaurant I went to on Saturday. They call it the TW8 martini. And they do it with caper berries. Like really big fat capers.
And it was good.
And a little bit of the caperberry juice in it. I've never had that before. That was very special.
Yum.
Or a nice glass of red wine. Or ginger beer, if I'm feeling abstemious. I love ginger beer.
I'm sure when you were showbiz editor, you must have wined and dined people.
Yeah.
Where was the spot to take people?
Well, it varied. So,
was it Nobu?
Nobu was a little bit later. We went to the Hempel a couple of times in South Kensington. I remember going there with the Lighthouse family, who I got on. They were lovely lads, Paul and Tunde. They were really, really...
What was the song?
I know, I mean, there's loads, but Lifted.
We
probably.
Can be lifted.
I loved them. And I hated the fact that people thought they were a bit naff, because they were not naff. Paul Tucker, the songwriter, his dance music credentials were impeccable. But you know how it happens sometimes, is that bands that are brilliant musically just get a weird reputation that they don't deserve.
So. Who are you a massive fan of, apart from the Lighthouse family and Robbie Williams, that you also gave 5 stars to?
Ian Brown was so low by the time I got onto Fleet Street, but the Stone Roses all day long. The Verve broke through during that period. I did Ian Brown on I'd been dumped the night before.
By the Greek girl?
Yes, it was actually. Oh. Well, we got back together. Later, but I've been dumped transatlantically. I was in a bit of a tizzy.
Yeah.
So I turn the tape on, I start interviewing him, and I say, 10 minutes in, I say, I'm sorry. I got dumped last night, and I'm just not focused. I can't remember. I've forgotten what I've already asked. I'm just in a right old mess.
What did Ian Brown say?
And he just said, oh, don't worry about it. He said, just write what you want.
I love that.
He said, don't make me sound like a twat. And then I think we'd kind of just had a couple of beers at the minibar and I went home. It was just, wasn't that nice of him?
And did you just write something?
I mean, I'd have drawn on what I had on the tape, and then I think I'd interviewed him once before. And these weren't massive articles, they're only about 500 words.
Oh, that's very funny.
Very kind of him.
Have I missed the bit where you got to LBC?
No.
So tell us how you got there, James.
Well, I was the world's worst showbiz editor. I could write good stories, but I never recognised. My antennae, my news sense was non-existent. Best example of that probably when I was at the chart show.
Yeah.
And Jerry Halliwell was performing. And Chris Evans was in her dressing room. And I just thought, oh, that's nice. And I open up the newspapers the next day, and every other newspaper obviously has the story of their burgeoning romance.
Oh, were they in a relationship?
About 10 minutes, I think.
I didn't know that.
I'm just crap at this. My phone would ring at midnight every night, and it'd be the night editor saying, the Daily Mail have got this story, the Sun have got this story, why haven't we got this story? And I'd have to say, it's because it's not true. And it was true, but I just missed it. I was rubbish. So the paper was owned by the same guy that owned most of Channel 5. And they were launching a TV show.
Called
The Right Stuff.
Oh, yeah, my friend Imol worked on it.
After my time.
So, was that a pleasant experience?
Mm, it was, actually. We moved to Norwich. I got out of newspapers, which was good. Which was a great... We were just married. My wife was still working on Fleet Street most of the time, but we got to spend a lot more time together than we would have done if we'd both been still on newspapers. And it went nuts for me overnight. I got offered a chat show by Anglia, so I did a regional chat show for ITV. I was being offered documentaries, and I just thought that's how it worked. I didn't have an agent. I just thought, this is easy. Why do people always talk about how hard it is to get into telly? And I was just for about 18 months we were rocking the house, and then it all ended. The production company, I think Anglia, lost the contract to make the programme. The new people making it didn't want the same panellists on every day. So they started rotating, and then you'd be booked a bit less and a bit less, and clearly I was being squeezed out. And when you're not on telly every day, people aren't ringing you up to offer you other stuff. And I said to Lucy, I'm going to have to go back to newspapers. This is dried up now. And she said, I realise now very diplomatically, instead of saying you were crap at newspapers, she said, you're really good at broadcasting, and I think you should give it a year.
Where did you meet Lucy?
At the Express.
Oh, at the Express.
And so I did, and towards the end of that year, LBC offered me some swing, some holiday cover, and that's kind of where it started, how I got in, just to pay my tax bill.
It's now like, well, I mean, it's huge.
Yeah, it's an amazing story.
You have the biggest news...
Biggest commercial radio talk show, which, considering the first show I did 20 years ago, on Sunday night, no one rang me. for an hour and 15 minutes. So I'm having to repeat the same stuff again and again and again. So repeating the phone number until it was like, excuse me.
Oh, my God. So
that's terrible.
And then at 11:15, so it was 10 o'clock on a Sunday night, and the slot I'd taken over from hadn't been a phone-in show. And listeners are quite creatures of habit.
Yeah.
So no one rang in. And at 11:15, phone, finally, one phone line lights up on the switchboard. And I recognise it, and it's my wife ringing from our landline at home. And she calls herself Miranda from Ladbroke Grove. And
what was her question?
Something about, well, I was talking about Diana, Princess of Wales, and trying to get a story going about that. She made nice, sensible contributions. And then my best mate, Luke, obviously realised what was happening, and he's an actor. And he rang in, and for reasons I've never fully understood, he decided to adopt a Northern Irish accent in case anyone recognised him.
That's amazing. On the radio.
It's also, it's one of the hardest accents to sustain. And halfway through, he stopped sustaining it. Lapped straight back into his sort of Notting Hill twang.
I feel like we need to go back to food for a bit.
Mm.
Even though this is fascinating and brilliant. Is there anywhere else you go regularly? You go to Greece.
Mm.
Is there anywhere else that you'll go and do you go for the food or are you going for the vibe? Are you going for the music or switching off? Sorry, you do have a mouthful, so I'm so sorry. Mm. I've just asked you that question when you've got a mouthful.
We've been to Venice. My wife loves Venice.
Oh, it's gorgeous. So expensive.
It is expensive. And we've been three times. And the first two times we went, we didn't have good food. We don't know why.
I don't think the food is great.
No, I don't think...
The duck ragu is their famous dish.
Is it? Mm. Yeah, it is, isn't it? Mm.
Duck ragu, and it's delicious if you get the right place. But I don't think when we went to Venice, we didn't eat well, did we?
No, but maybe we just didn't know the spots.
They
maybe
sure
that's
doing
that's the point. It's a bit like being in Leicester Square and looking
for... Yeah, right,
it
is. Yeah.
So the last time we went, and we stayed in an Airbnb rather than a hotel, and we just hit the jackpot. And every meal we had.
Thank you.
A little bit further from the main drag, every meal we had was extraordinary. And I can remember some of the meals we had there, some of the pasta dishes we had there, which were good enough to want to go back for that.
Okay.
And also Lucy loves Venice, so I'd like, you know.
It is gorgeous.
Yeah, it really is.
I want to know, have they tried to poach you for other programmes?
He wouldn't be able to
I
say.
I can't really answer that question.
Okay. But, do you think you'll be staying at the
LBC?
Well,
I can say yes, but yeah. I can't go into too many details. But also, you know, the landscape is very right-wing now. The new broadcast platforms that are being set up are slightly to the right of Genghis Khan, so which is really weird, actually. And I don't write about this because it's too self-referential. But if you have managed to take a leftish liberal position and turn it into the most popular show on the market... Why are they all setting up stations to be right wing? Why are they all trying to emulate the so you look at what's happened at LBC, people like Sheila Fogarty coming in, people like Emily Maitlis,
Carol
Vorderman and Maitlis Soper and Lewis doing the podcast for the newsagents, Lewis doing a show on LBC. And much, much more. The transformation from when Hopkins and Farage were on the station. And it's much more popular now. So the people setting up GBBs or Talk TV are not doing it to be market leaders. They're doing it for different reasons.
What are they doing it for?
They're doing it for influence.
Succession. It's so terrifying.
Yeah. It is terrifying.
Because when you track Boris's, for example, just Boris's journey,
yes,
it is terrifying how he got there. And it was all kind of calculated. It wasn't just by chance.
No, and sponsored as well. I thought Alistair explained this on Table Manners better than I can. And because he's so much closer to the action and he's been there and been around the block and played the bagpipes. But that combination, that Venezuelan writer he quotes, who talked about the three Ps, populism... polarisation and
What's the other one?
I did it again. Sorry, I tapped the tape.
Are you a broadcaster?
Yeah, but I'm a very maverick broadcaster.
Okay.
Who breaks the rules. on a daily basis.
Should I have a go at these? Put these on.
I just need to know.
No.
I just need to know how many, as being a journalist, how many episodes of Table Manners did you listen to before coming on here?
I'd listen.
And
to,
were you terrified?
I'd listen. I know. I'd listened to a couple back in the day because you were very early adopters.
Oh, thank you.
And it still pops up on my notification. So I listened to Andrew Ridgely quite recently.
Lovely.
I was so jealous. I couldn't get him on mine. And I know for a fact that I'm a bigger Wham fan than either of you.
No, you're not.
I am.
No,
you're not.
Hey, everybody, take a look at me. I've got street credibility. I may not have a job, but I have a good time with the boys that I meet down on the line. Go on.
Young Guns. Is that Young Guns?
No, yeah. Next verse.
Yeah, no.
Last Christmas.
My God, you and Alistair Campbell would really get on.
We do get on quite
you
well.
You could go back to back with Wham and ABBA.
It says, yes. No, I like Alistair. He's a force for good.
He is.
He is a force for good, and he doesn't. He doesn't ever get jaded, which I find quite hard sometimes not to get jaded. But his appetite for the fight is undimmed, isn't it? As came across very powerfully in your interview with him.
I would like to know if we were coming to your house, what would you cook for us, James?
Well, I've bought a new oven, so we've just had a lot of work done. And I've bought a new oven that has a rotisserie in
it. Have you tried it?
Yeah, and I have not got the hang of it. So I would not cook you a rotisserie unless I've had the chance to practice. Yes. Oh, here's the thing.
What?
Do you know that Saint-Aubert blue cheese cream?
Yeah, I love it.
Stick a tablespoon of that in a bowl of sprouts and thank me later.
Oh,
that's a really good idea. Mm.
That's my first recipe.
Okay, so would that be our starter?
Yeah. So I'm not joking.
You know that with a vodka martini would be delicious.
That's my desert island dish.
That would be bloody fantastic.
No, it is. It's like you go, oh my Christ, how come no one else has thought of this? It's just extraordinary. And you don't need the chestnuts or the pancetta. You just do the sprouts, a spoonful of the Saint-Aubert, and you're
right.
Away.
Okay.
Laughing.
So we'd have sprouts with Saint-Aubert.
Yeah.
And then we wouldn't have the chicken rotisserie until we've done a few more things.
I do a lamb. I'd like a lamb on the barbecue. So you get a butterfly leg of lamb from the butchers. There's a great butchers near us called Wyndham House who've got a place in the garden centre around the corner. You know how garden centres...
The garden centre being Peachum's
nursery. Oh, is that garden centre?
Yeah, the one in... So there's two reasons to go there for foodies. Number one is the Wyndham's butcher.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Number two is my friend Enzo, who has the ice cream van in the car park. Enzo, if you mention my name, Enzo will sort you out.
Get free ice cream. Yeah.
And he also sells olive oil. If he's been at home in Italy recently, he'll have some top of the range, like artisan olive oil.
I love you, James.
You say I'm not much of a sweet person, but you're shouting out your ice cream bloke in a Caribbean car park.
Yeah, although you know he does this pistachio thing, which isn't really as sweet, but it's got pistachio oil in it, and I think he gets them in from Italy as well. And it's like a big mini milk on a stick.
But
it's quite savoury, as it you know, with a pistachio. It's extraordinary.
Well, Michael
so
McIntyre.
I'll get you one of those.
Okay, thank you. I love that, actually. Michael McIntyre came on here and he talked about having olive oil on his ice cream when he went to Italy. So, yeah. Are they in? Are the fondants in?
But I think it's going to be more than 9 minutes.
It sounds slightly sparse. Brussels sprouts and a pistachio ice cream.
You distracted me.
The lamb.
Yeah, so I do a butterfly leg of lamb that Wyndham's prepare, and they put it in a sealed bag with all the garlic and rosemary and stuff.
And then you barbecue.
And I do a half and half barbecue, where you put all the charcoal on one side of the barbecue, and you sear the lamb for about 2 or 3 minutes each side
above the coals.
And then you move it to the non-coal bit and put the lid on, and it cooks to absolute perfection.
How many minutes?
The gas barbecue.
It's half and half. No, I use charcoal, but you've only got charcoal on one side of the. How hard is this?
How would it? I don't understand.
You put the lid on, and it's working like an oven.
Okay. Yeah.
How long would you cook? So 40 minutes, I think, for barbecue.
Possibly slightly longer, but I've got a Heston Blumenthal meat thermometer from TK Maxx.
Okay.
But it's
Do you it rare?
Yes, I do. But the thing with the butterfly leg of lamb is that the ends of it are not rare. So
no,
it's a pièce de résistance.
It's a win-win.
There's something for everybody. So
yeah,
you can
win-win.
Give them the sort of, like, you know, nice bit, the nice crunchy bit on the end, and then other people can have. So I'd serve that. Probably not with sprouts in blue cheese.
What would you do?
With that, salad and a salsa verde. Salsa verde, you see. That's one of my
salsa
things.
Verde.
Yeah, I use Jamie's recipe for that.
It's really good.
His recipe. And he puts all sorts of stuff in there, like gherkins and
anchovies, the gherkin juice. Yeah.
Look at that. That is what I call moist. Yeah. That's more
the worst,
than moist.
The worst word in the world. However,
sorry, I heard you say that as well.
Rick Astley.
Was Alistair's word as well? What was it? Portion.
Portion. This is yummy, Mum. This is
good.
This is really good.
Except it shouldn't be the other way around, but I couldn't do it.
Yeah. Why?
It's supposed to come out so you have the crusty bit.
Oh, I see.
That's good, Mum. I'm going to have some cream on it too, just to really seal the deal of cows today.
That's
great, Mum.
Good job.
They're quite easy to make, actually.
Don't say that.
No, just take the plaudits.
So, do you have a nostalgic taste that can transport you back somewhere, good or bad?
What a great question. Pear drops. Pear drops all the time. Proper big, fat ones that cut your mouth to ribbons and that weird flavour that you get off the back of them.
Was there a particular place you'd be eating them? In the back of the car on the way back to
There was a tuck shop at school, just to go Enid Blyton for a minute. And you could order quarters of sweets. I never had any money. But it wasn't that. I think pear drops go back to Friday sweets. So there was a sweet shop on Hercott Road in Kidderminster where Tom Watson grew up, former deputy. We didn't know each other, Greg. Our mums knew each other. I think our mums were both people that it took 2 hours to go around Sainsbury's because they had to stop and say hello to everybody. But there was a proper sweet shop at the end of the road and you'd order a quarter of something.
Okay, pear drops or cannabis?
These days, pear drops all day
okay.
long.
Mum, this is really good. Mm. James O'Brien, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you.
Do you want another?
I can't.
How could you do two chocolate fondants?
I can tell you now that I had a dicky tummy yesterday.
Oh, shit.
Well, don't say that. That could become a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Do you want to...
I knew I was going to be all right, but this is the first time I've eaten since 11 o'clock yesterday.
You've done very well.
I knew I was going to be fine without going into detail.
But you don't want another one.
But I don't think I'll have another, no.
No, Mum, it's quite rich having a whole fondant.
That was exceptional. It was delicious. I'm not going to have another one.
I don't think they'll keep.
Do you not?
No.
Okay, fondant next door.
I can't go next door with fondants.
Why not? It's only 8:30. They could eat it and watch Traitors.
I don't even know if they're there.
James O'Brien, thank you so much.
Thank you. What a treat.
Is just busy enjoying her wine. You were loving the fact that he was having a few glasses with you.
I loved it.
Yeah.
I love a wine drinker.
She's gone.
So, what did you think of the tagine? It was good.
I nearly told him.
I know you did. And he will listen and he will find out.
He will
out.
Listen. So now, James...
I think we shouldn't.
James, we apologise. It was, I'd say, 70% Lenny,
30% Cook,
or... No. 60-40?
No. Definitely 70-30.
But we had to give you something to eat.
Yeah.
And actually...
The energy went into the chocolate fondant.
Yeah, and you know what? That was all then.
Do you know what's clever about chocolate fondant?
What?
I made it last night. So it's in the fridge.
Ooh, a little prep.
So you could prep it and then just pop it in.
Pop it in?
Yeah.
It was bloody
good. Did
ready
you like
good.
It?
But James O'Brien, we do apologise that is the first time that we actually have had Cook enter... the meal, and I nearly told you, and then I just thought that was cruel. James O'Brien, what a brilliant guest.
Delightful.
The amount of information he can retain. I can't even remember my children's names.
But he knows about everything.
He knows about everything, and he's just incredibly measured.
But he does go for the bad guys.
He does go for the bad guys.
And he does love a good guy.
I loved hearing the Beckham story, and he looked so... embarrassed.
Yeah, he should be. That was mean.
Thank you, James O'Brien, for being on the podcast. Brilliant guest.
Good.
Lenny was a rev.
Yeah.
And we'll see you next week.
Hey, Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress Manicure and Press-On Falsies.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.